In July of 1910, the body of the daughter of a respected farmer in Winston County, Mississippi, was discovered in the woods not far from her family's home. A man would be arrested for her murder, and over the next 2 years, he would face trial, conviction, and in time, retrial. Two men associated with the case would also be murdered. This is the mystery of who killed Janie Sharp. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. When someone is murdered in a small town, everyone is affected. It can consume the town, even split it in two, just as it did in the farming community of Rural Hill in Winston County, Mississippi. In 1910, Rural Hill was like most towns in the state. The town's church, schoolhouse, general store, and post office served as the social center of the community that was made up of farmers who would raise cotton, corn, or livestock for generations. Life in Rural Hill was fairly ordinary until July 21st, 1910, the day Janie Sharp's lifeless body was discovered in the woods, not far from her home. Soon after, the son of another farming family in the community would be arrested for Janie's murder. His trial and the debate over who really murdered this young woman left Rural Hill divided, and it would lead to the murder of two men associated with the case. For generations, people have been asking, who killed Janie Sharp? Folks who grew up in Winston County will tell you they know some of the family members involved, even remember their own grandmothers or great-grandmothers keeping newspaper clippings from the days after Janie was murdered and from both of the trials of her suspected killer. Janie Sharp's murder worked its way into the hearts and minds of all of Winston County back in the early 20th century, and Janie's remained there for generations, with many who have their own theories about the murder and who really killed Janie Sharp. In late July of 1910, Mississippi papers carried headlines about the horrific murder that had shocked residents in the small northeast Mississippi town of Rural Hill. The Columbus Appeal called the murder of Miss Janie Sharp one of the most harrowing and unprovoked murders in Mississippi history. 18-year-old Pernina Janie Sharp was the daughter of Will and Martha Sharp, a well-respected farming family in Rural Hill. Janie was a popular young woman in the community. She was well-liked and loved connecting with her neneighbors. On July 21st, 1910, Janie told her mother that she was walking to town to buy a few things from the Williams General Store and pick up the family's mail from the post office. Janie took her parasol, her handkerchief, and began the mile-and-a-half walk to town. She picked up the mail, bought a few things from the store, including a local newspaper. Janie spent some time chatting with neighbors and friends in the store until about 3 p.m. when she headed out and down the country road that led to the Sharp family home. Later, folks would say they wish they had followed her, had heard a cry for help. Maybe they could have saved her. But someone made sure Janie would never be seen alive again by her family and friends. What should have been a simple walk to and from town on a summer day ended in tragedy for Janie's family. As hours later, her mother became concerned. Janie had been gone for too long, and she sensed something was wrong. Mothers always know these things. Janie's mother walked into town to look for her, asked neighbors if they had seen her. She kept hearing her daughter had been there, had been in town, and was seen walking towards the Sharp home, which caused even more concern for her family as the hours passed. Search parties were organized around 6 p.m., with men searching Rural Hill for any sign of Janie. As the night wore on, the searchers agreed they would have to rest and begin their search again at first light. But Janie's brother, Lee, refused to quit looking for his sister. He circled back, once again searching near the Sharp family property. Just before sunrise, Lee was searching along a country road not far from their home when he saw Janie in a ravine just off the road. Lee called out to his sister, called for Janie, but there would be no response. As he moved closer to Janie, Lee realized it was the lifeless body of his sister he had found in the ravine. And the scene, it overwhelmed him. The Commercial Appeal shared that Lee fainted when he found his sister's body, writing that Janie's body was found in a pool of water, horribly mutilated, with her head crushed and her throat cut from ear to ear. When Lee regained consciousness, he made his way back to the Sharp home, where he had to deliver the news to his mother and father that Janie was dead. Janie's father, Will, returned to the ravine to bring his daughter's body home so the family could prepare her for burial. Will Sharp called for authorities and bloodhounds to be brought in to track the person who killed his daughter. Meanwhile, news spread quickly of Janie's murder. More and more people gathered near the crime scene as the town processed the loss of a beloved young woman. A doctor would examine Janie's body and found she had been hit several times in the head with an unknown weapon. Her throat had been slashed, and she had been stabbed several times under the chin. There were also signs she had been assaulted before she died. When the Winston County Sheriff arrived from nearby Louisville, he examined the scene and found clear signs of a struggle near the ravine where Janie's body had been discovered. The packages, newspaper, her family's mail she had left the store with were spread out around the area along with her parasol, but there was no sign of her handkerchief. From information provided by investigators and news reports, we know authorities believe Janie had been taken from that country road and there appeared to be a struggle. From tracks Lee Sharp discovered when he returned to his sister's murder scene, it appeared Janie had tried to run from her attacker before her killer overtook her. Around noon on the day Janie's body was discovered, bloodhounds were brought into the area to track the killer. William McKelly is a Winston County businessman and author who has researched the murder of Janie for his book, Murder in Rural Hill. In a web series for the Winston County News, McKelly wrote of the hounds that were brought to Rural Hill and one hound who proved to be vital in the investigation. The hound, named Ruth Hindu, tracked a trail straight to the Permanser family's home. McKelly writes that Ruth Hindu continued tracking around this family's property and reared up on the front gate, where she scented on a group of men, including a young man named Swinton Permenter. She cued in on Swinton, who was searched. Authorities also searched inside the family's home, where they found clothes Swinton had worn earlier in the day. Inside his pockets, a knife, some tobacco, and two handkerchiefs, a man and a woman's. Janie Sharp was young and beautiful, and she was considered quite the catch for any young man in Rural Hill. At the time of her death, she was engaged to a young man named Earl Ray. But another man was rumored to have set his sights on winning Janie's heart. We don't know the exact nature of the relationship between this man and Janie, or if there ever was one. We know he made threats of some kind against Janie's father, Will, perhaps because he had voiced his desire for Janie and kept pursuing her even though she refused. Maybe that's why Will Sharp didn't like him. The young man's name? Swinton Permenter. It seemed Janie's family and a few folks around town believed Swinton to be the prime suspect in the murder hours before Ruth Hindu tracked a scent to the Permenter's house. As William McCulley noted in his series about the murder, some folks in Rural Hill immediately suspected Swinton could be the reason Janie was missing early on in the search. McCulley writes that it's possible some of them knew or suspected Swinton had tried to act on his desire for Janie. There were rumors about Swinton having assaulted a young girl in the past, which made some of his neighbors and Janie's family suspicious of him. Once Janie had gone missing and search parties were organized, Janie's brother Lee noticed Swinton had joined the search and seemed to direct searchers away from a specific area a few times. He would tell the men that he had already looked for Janie in that area and there were no signs of her. Lee Sharp would later find his sister's body in the area Swinton told the search parties to avoid. As the news spread that Will Sharp had called for bloodhounds to track Janie's killer, Swinton Permenter was heard saying the dogs would track him because he had been in the woods on the day Janie was murdered. And Swinton had been near the scene of the crime. He had been out swimming with friends at a creek not far from the ravine where Janie's body was found. Swinton mentioned he needed to go home to change clothes. The clothes from earlier in the day were the clothes authorities discovered inside the Permenter home with a knife and the lady's handkerchief authorities found in his pocket. The handkerchief that investigators claimed belonged to Janie Sharp. The handkerchief that was not on her body or near the crime scene, despite everything else she had carried from town being strewn across the scene. The sheriff theorized that Swinton had taken it as a memento to remember the woman he loved, the young woman who perhaps paid the ultimate price for rejecting him. Things weren't looking good for Swinton. The lady's handkerchief in his pockets, Ruth Hindu tracking to the Permenter's home, Swinton's strange behavior as the search parties organized and looked for Janie. It was all circumstantial evidence, but that was enough for the sheriff to take Swinton into custody, along with his two friends who had been swimming with him on the day Janie died. The men were taken to the Winston County Jail in Louisville, but a mob had already been organized, and talks of lynching forced the sheriff to transfer the three men. Under the cover of darkness, the men were transferred from the Winston County seat of Louisville to the Montgomery County Jail in Winona, about 45 miles north of Louisville. Days later, Swinton Permenter's friends were released due to lack of evidence. Swinton would be indicted and charged with the murder of Janie Sharp. The trial of Swinton Permenter began in Louisville in late September of 1910. Tensions ran high and progress in the trial would be slow. On September 24th, the front page of the Tuscaloosa News featured an update on the trial, writing, "Surrounded by men armed with shotguns as his guard, while the courtroom was filled with relatives of the slain girl holding rifles, Swinton Permenter was brought into the courtroom today. Owing to the intense feeling, the trial was postponed and Permenter was rushed to a secret hiding place. Relatives of Janie Sharp have stated that no matter what the court's decision, Permenter must die." In an effort to protect the defendant, witnesses, and the public at large, the governor ordered that the militia be present during the trial. An order would be needed. William McCulley's series on Janie Sharp's death made it clear that the Rural Hill community was split in two. It seemed half the town believed Swinton murdered Janie and stood with her family, some vowing Swinton would pay for it, while the other half believed Swinton was innocent and stood with his family, doing all they could to help protect Swinton and the Permenters. The trial was further complicated by the divide in Rural Hill and threats that would be mailed to witnesses. The Hattiesburg Press ran a piece that revealed several of the state's witnesses received anonymous threats, warning them that their lives would be in danger if they divulged any information that damaged the accused. But the threats didn't work. The witnesses vowed they would not be intimidated and would risk death to take the stand and tell the truth. Circumstantial evidence was the center of the prosecution's case against Swinton, and they zeroed in on the handkerchief found in his clothes, the one they claimed belonged to Janie Sharp. They asked how it came to be in his pocket if he had not seen Janie on the day she died, which Swinton had maintained. But the defense called their key witness, who refuted the claim that that handkerchief was Janie's. Swinton's sister took the stand, claimed the handkerchief was hers, not Janie's, that it wasn't unique, and she had seen Janie with a handkerchief just like hers. Once Swinton's fate was in the hands of the jury, it took very little time for them to return a verdict. Guilty. The Columbus Appeal wrote that Swinton Permenter's demeanor, as the verdict was read, was calm. He remained indifferent as he had during the entire trial, and he remained stoic when he heard his sentence. Swinton Permenter was sentenced to death, with his sentence scheduled to be carried out on November 25th, 1910. His defense team appealed the case to the Supreme Court. Fears of lynching remained high, especially as Permenter spoke with the press and in one interview stated the following: "Public sentiment convicted me, but that does not make me guilty of this crime, and I am confident I will eventually be exonerated." Those comments angered the men who had vowed to see Swinton Permenter hang. Authorities transferred Swinton to a jail in Jackson to protect him while he waited news of his appeal. Swinton would tell jailers that he thought two other men committed the crime, and they had been witnesses for the prosecution's case against him. Back in Rural Hill, the tables turned. Witnesses against Swinton Permenter had been threatened during the trial, but after the guilty verdict had been handed down, the Sharp family found threats against their life posted on their door. The trouble was real, and the fear was too. Weeks after the verdict, Will Sharp made the decision to sell his property in Rural Hill and move down the road to Kosciuszko, Mississippi. Some of those who had supported the Sharp family and believed Swinton to be guilty followed suit, as more than a dozen received warnings to leave the county lest they fall on bad luck and lose someone they love. On April 24, 1911, the Supreme Court of Mississippi announced their decision. Based on questions surrounding an instruction that had been given to the jury about the validity of circumstantial evidence, the court ruled they had doubts about Swinton Permenter's guilt. They ordered his verdict be reversed and remanded. Swinton was eligible for bail and would be released from jail in May of 1911. The state would take their case against Swinton to trial again, but before the second trial began, two people associated with the case would be murdered. Swinton Permenter's attorney argued for a change of venue for his second trial and won. The trial was set to start in Winona, Mississippi in October of 1911. But several witnesses were no-shows, and there was a complication when Swinton's sister, who would once again be a key witness for the defense, was ill and unable to appear in court. As the judge worked with attorneys on both sides to reschedule the trial, a detective named Ben Walker arrived in Winston County with a man in tow, a man he claimed to be Janie Sharp's killer, Thomas McElroy. Detective Walker was a familiar face in the county. He was engaged to a young woman in Rural Hill and had close connections there. Walker had testified in the first trial, although no one's really sure why. And to be honest, we don't know if he was really a detective who had been ordered to find Janie's killer. But that's what Walker claimed. He claimed the governor asked him to look into the case. When Walker arrived in Winston County in November 1911, he said he had done his job, found Janie's killer. Thomas McElroy had lived in Rural Hill and was related to Janie Sharp's fiancé, Earl Ray. The detective's theory that McElroy murdered Janie Sharp was based on one simple thing. McElroy moved his family to Texas 2 months after Janie was murdered. That's it. No motive, no other suspicion, just to move from Mississippi to Texas. Detective Walker went further in his accusations, arresting a man named Hewlett Ray and claiming he was McElroy's accomplice. This was based on information he claimed to have from a Rural Hill resident named Albert Val. Authorities in Winston County never considered these men to be suspects. They told Walker they would not be filing charges against McElroy or Ray, but they would be filing charges against him. They arrested Detective Ben Walker and charged him with attempting to bribe witnesses. That charge was based on suspicions around Detective Walker's involvement in the case. There have long been rumors circulating that Swinton Permenter's family hired this detective to find a couple of fall guys. More suspects would help Swinton's case because it would help create reasonable doubt with a jury in his trial. The accusation that Walker was hired by the Permenters for that purpose was never proven, but the rumor did some serious damage. It made a lot of people angry at Walker for inserting himself in the case, possibly preventing justice for Janie Sharp. That anger boiled over on the evening of March 21st, 1912. That night, Ben Walker was staying in the home of Albert Val. He was sitting near a window, reading a book by lamplight, when he was shot in the head and immediately died. No suspects were ever named, and to this day, Ben Walker's murder remains unsolved. Within months, another man would learn that inserting himself into the investigation of the murder of Janie Sharp could be deadly. In early August 1912, Swinton Permenter's defense team was preparing for his second trial. 2 years after the murder of Janie Sharp, the anger and the tension around the case had not died down. More threats against witnesses and Swinton, who had returned to Winston County for a brief time, led to a change of venue. The judge believed the best way to deal with the problem was to create distance between the threats coming from Winston County and the county seat of Louisville, where the trial was set to take place. He moved the case to Winona. 3 days before the second trial of Swinton Permenter was set to begin, Swinton and his brother Walter were staying with their brother-in-law in a small town about an hour north of Rural Hill. Walter had worked with Detective Walker to gain evidence against Thomas McElroy and Hewlett Ray. He was vocal in his defense of his brother. We'll never know if that vocal defense led to someone believing they needed to silence Walter, or if someone shot the wrong man. Walter Permenter walked outside to get a drink of water, and minutes later, he was shot in the head and chest and died. Authorities worked the case, tried to find answers, but just like the murder of Detective Ben Walker, no suspect was ever charged for Walter's death, and his murder also remains unsolved. Suspicions remain high that whoever shot Walter Permenter that night got the wrong man. Many believe the killer was there to murder Swinton, whose trial would be postponed a few days to allow the family to bury Walter. Swinton's second trial began in Winona on August 12, 1912. The murder of 18-year-old Janie Sharp on a country road in a small Mississippi town continued to disturb and concern Mississippians who wanted justice for Janie. The courtroom was packed throughout the 12-day trial. The prosecutor argued what he had argued during the first trial. Swinton Permenter wanted Janie and couldn't have her. And when he saw Janie on that country road, he attacked her, assaulted her, and brutally murdered her. Remember the handkerchief that had been key to the state's case against Swenson in the first trial? The prosecution called Janie's mother to the stand. She testified that she had no doubts that the handkerchief found in Swenson's possession after Janie was murdered belonged to her daughter. She knew this because there had been a tear and some stitching of that tear in Janie's handkerchief. Janie's brother Lee, who had suffered the shock of discovering his sister's body, had to endure 5 hours of testimony during this trial. His testimony was along the same lines as it had been during the trial of 1910. The state also added witnesses in their case, two men who corroborated Lee Sharp's testimony that Swenson Permenter was acting in a very strange way during the search for Janie. Those men happened to be the men Detective Ben Walker tried to have arrested for Janie's murder, Hewlett Ray and Thomas McElroy. The defense worked to discredit witnesses and cast doubts on the evidence. They questioned the time frame of the murder and claimed Swenson wasn't near the area. And they called a witness who testified that he was at the Sharp home when Janie's body was being prepared for burial. He said he would never forget seeing Janie's parasol and her handkerchief nearby as the family wept over Janie. The defense asked the jury, if Janie's handkerchief was in the family home, how could the one Swenson had in his clothing after her death be the key piece of circumstantial evidence in the state's case against him? When the witness was cross-examined by the state, he was asked to provide proof or any witness who could corroborate what he had seen in the Sharp home, something he was unable to do. The jury began deliberations on August 23rd. They took a break to rest that night and returned early the next morning. At 8:30 on the morning of August 24th, the jury announced they had a verdict. Not guilty. The Commercial Appeal wrote of the reactions from the Permenter and Sharp families, saying Swenson and his family immediately thanked the jury. Swenson's father was quoted as saying, "Thank God, my poor boy's free. He never killed that girl." As you can imagine, the Sharps didn't see it that way. Will Sharp reacted quickly, saying the verdict was a crying shame. "Nobody in the world but Permenter killed my daughter, and if they were to bring in another man charged with a crime, I'd say nobody but Swenson murdered her." Swenson Permenter was set free that day. He left the courthouse under heavy guard, heading to a point unknown. If Swenson was guilty of the murder of Janie Sharp, he never confessed to anyone who would admit it. As Will Sharp said in the courtroom, he believed his daughter was murdered by Swenson, and no one would ever convince him otherwise. Not far from Rural Hill, a tall marble monument towers above the graves at Center Ridge Methodist Church in Louisville, Mississippi. The monument honors Will and Martha Sharp's beloved daughter, Janie. The inscription honoring their daughter's life reads, "Sleep on, dear Janie, thy work is done, thy mortal pangs are over. Jesus has come and borne thee home, beyond this world of sin and woe." Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. Janie Sharp's murder is notorious in Winston County, Mississippi. The impact of her death on the community was felt as recently as the 1970s. In researching the case, William McCulley shared that until then, if a student in a local high school wanted to write a paper about Janie's murder, they were told not to do it, lest it reopen old wounds. This month, you may just find some young people gathered near Janie's monument in Lewisville. McCulley shared that around Halloween, it's a favorite place for teenagers to gather and tell ghost stories. You can find a link to read William McCulley's Murder in Rural Hill, The Tragic Tale of Miss Janie Sharp and Swinton Permenter, in the show notes for this episode. I want to say a special thanks to Stacy Kay, who has become the first person to support the show on a monthly basis. You can join Stacy in supporting the show and also find a link to shop for podcast merchandise at southernmysteries.com. That's where you can find full show notes for this episode, catch up on previous episodes, and make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening so you never miss Southern Mysteries. Thanks for listening.